Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Close Up Talk Radio, the unique internet broadcast series that brings you together with some of the most amazing, important, and interesting individuals from the worlds of business, industry, travel, art, and entertainment. From company owners, CEOs, and presidents, to the technical wizards behind the scenes who create the magic that make their company's products and services so special. Here is your opportunity to hear firsthand the fascinating stories of how it all happened from those who actually made it possible. This is Close Up Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Good morning to where, good afternoon, whatever it might be, wherever you are. I'm Doug Llewellyn, your host, and it's nice to have you back with us again. We are really happy because Ginger French is back with us today. Ginger has been our guest numerous times now on these Wednesdays in this hour. And as you know, Ginger is a former pharmacist. She was the very first doctor of pharmacy in the entire state of Kansas, and she has a fascinating background in that field of pharmacy. As a doctor of pharmacy, by the way, she understood both the chemistry and the physiology, the drug and the patient. And when she first arrived in Kansas to work at the largest hospital in Kansas, she said she would only take that job if she could do teaching rounds with the residents. And as a result, she bears the distinction of being the very first pharmacist to ever round with physicians. I ask you, have you ever been in a hospital and had a pharmacist make rounds and visit you? That, you know, I don't think that happens today at all. So that was really, truly rare on her part. She had an injury several years ago that forced her to retire from her position. To today, she really is heavily involved in her spare time as an investor. She is a day trader, and that's a whole other area that we can talk about. But we've had some fascinating conversations about the history of pharmacy, the history of some of the early drugs, and what it was like to be a pharmacist back when she began in the field. One thing that we didn't talk to Ginger very much about, I want to ask her that before we go into other areas of her life, because she has certainly had her ups and downs in life. I understand, Ginger, I know you're there, you have served many times as an expert witness in court trials. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It's not something I was expecting to do. Let me make one quick correction, Doug, and that is that I was the first pharmacist to round in Kansas with docs, but I mean it still happens
isn't that
all
what
the
I
time now.
It does happen. Does that happen all the time now? It does.
Yeah, but it's much more common in teaching centers than it is other places. But a lot of hospitals, their pharmacists that are not still in the basement where the pharmacy is, where they used to always be, but are out and, you know, spread out throughout the hospital and various satellites and stuff. The hospital where I work even has a pharmacist in surgery. And
wow.
So And he, one of the things that happened when they instituted that is, and it was really a smart move on the part of the pharmacy administration, they cut the costs of care up there, pharmacy care up there, and drugs that were going in and out, huge, by more than half, and changed the use so that things were being used more properly. But a lot of things were kind of being lost or being walked off with or getting stuck in some doctor's bag to go to the next hospital. That stopped happening. There was really good control after that, so it was pretty interesting.
That makes sense. I understand that. Talk to me a little bit about how and why it was necessary for you to appear as a witness in court trials. And why would they need a pharmacist to come into a trial?
Well, the first trial, actually, that I was involved with was a trial where one of the physicians at the hospital where I was working was being sued, and it was a very, very complicated case, and the lawyers for the hospital knew who I was and asked me to take a look at, you know, some of the information, and see if I had any input. This was weeks and weeks before the trial was, well, by a month, several months before the trial was supposed to start. But it was supposedly a wrongful death, and that, you know, there's a lot of money involved. Malpractice is a very high-paying thing, and if you're if the trial is successful, the jury usually is very generous, and I don't say that in a judgmental way. It just is the way it is, and definitely used to be that way more even than it is now. But the first thing I ended up doing, because it was potentially a drug overdose, was and a drug overdose of a drug that we all know and love, Tylenol. I mean, it was just,
wow.
You know, not expected. And so the first thing I did for them was just say, here are two people I think you should contact and have testify as expert witnesses. And one of them was out in Colorado, and I knew of him only by reputation, but I knew he had the largest database on Tylenol overdoses, because he was at a poison control center where they did, they were relatively new, where they did and had tons and tons of cases, thousands of cases to draw information from. And the
right.
other one that I recommended was a gentleman I had worked with who had been, when I was at the University of Nebraska, my first 2 years in practice, the emergency room pharmacist. So there was a pharmacist in the emergency room, and I had rotated through there, and I covered for him every Friday night. He worked 4 to midnight. And I give him my choice of what day do you want to work, and I thought, gosh, I want to work on a day when it's busy. So I worked on Friday nights there, and he had gone back to his home university in Detroit, and so they tracked him down, and he testified too, and that was there was a huge difference in that trial. I spent actually. The entire trial, which went on for weeks, I spent a lot of my days at the trial and sending questions up to the lawyers and stuff like that. And at one break, the judge asked one of the attorneys, who's this person you have back there who's sending up all these notes? Because you can see these little yellow notes getting passed up.
And it was you.
Yeah, it was me.
Let me ask you a question. A lot of people listening may be somewhat thrown off by you hearing a drug overdose case involving Tylenol. Was that on purpose, or was it an accidental overdose of Tylenol?
Oh. Well, it was accidental, and frankly, it was not an overdose. But
oh, okay.
It could have been shown to have it could have looked like an overdose over a long period of time. The case was successfully won by the hospital and the physician who was being sued, but it was a very, very difficult case, and this patient was a very, very difficult and unusual patient, and really the final tipping point, besides these two gentlemen who were incredible expert witness to the good show, you know, how the drug accumulates and how much at any time would have been in this person's body and that sort of thing. The other thing was that there was an infectious disease physician who testified and said that he really could not say that it was not the death was not due to something else, which is an infectious disease issue. And that kind of threw everybody off, because they were anticipating that it was just going to be Tylenol, Tylenol, Tylenol. And I kept saying, be ready to the lawyers, be ready for something else, because this is not a Tylenol overdose. And it's going to go some other direction. And it did.
Oh, okay. I would imagine people would wonder how you could overdose on Tylenol. I guess you can overdose on anything, but I mean, that's
actually Tylenol is very toxic because if you take more than 4 grams a day, that would be 8 extra strength Tylenol.
Yeah.
If you take more than that a day, and if you take a significant amount more, it's very toxic, and it is toxic to your liver, and the signs of the overdose don't show up until days after the drug has been taken. So people can think, oh, gosh, I'm going to, you know, suicide on this drug, and
right.
then change their minds, and it's too late. Unless, you know, unless I call within, you know, an hour or two, or maybe 5 or 10 hours, I don't know what the exact number is, because there is a way to reverse it and protect against
yeah.
it. But
that's interesting.
It was just very new and subtle at that point in time. Very,
be careful
very
about
unusual.
Too much Tylenol. All right, let's get on to some other subjects. We talked a lot about the various incidents in your life, of your traumatic brain injury. You've had breast cancer. Your husband, who is a surgeon, lost 2 fingers in an accident, which is obviously is very detrimental for a surgeon, although he bounced back and has done a lot of surgeries minus those 2 fingers, which was pretty interesting story, to say the least. I wanted to ask you something about having a twin sister, being a twin, and the impact of having, you know, of being a twin and the impact on your life in general. Because, you know, when you're growing up, if you're a twin, you always have a built-in playmate, and it's certainly such a wonderful thing. But what's it like growing up with a twin and then going through later life? I assume you two are still extremely close, am I right?
You're right. We are. We're very close. When we were born, we're old enough now that we were born before the fertility drugs were around, and so twins were very unusual, and triples were even more rare. Now with fertility drugs, there are quite a few twins around, but we were such an anomaly that my father's, for instance, the big company that my father worked for, had a big spread on a picture with my dad and mom and our older sister, who was only 18 months old when we arrived, and the two of us in our mom's arms, and it said twins, redheads too, and we were redheads when we were born. Then we went to ash blonde, and then it slowly got darker and came to be kind of a brown color, but I mean it was a lifelong coloring change. But it was, we were very fortunate. I would say the first thing about growing up with a twin is there is always someone there, and that person is someone you knew. Like, I mean, we were posting some notes to each other, and I posted one, and I said, you know, you're the best roommate, WOMB. Anyone could have ever wanted to have. And, you know, just really glad that God had chosen to perform that miracle, because it has made, you know, I just can't imagine life without her. I don't live in the same state. We didn't go to the same college. But that doesn't take away with who we are. And we're a very close family. So we had a sister who was only 18 months old when we were born. I'm sure that was amazing for my parents. And then my younger sister is 2.5 years younger than us. So they had 4 under 4. They're 4 and under, let's put it that way. And that's pretty incredible. But I remember them saying one time, we lived in New Jersey, and we just spent a lot of beach time, which was wonderful. And my father telling the story of coming through to go to the beach, and everybody got paid by their age and that sort of thing, going into this relatively public area. And the guy said, how many kids? And my dad said, 3 children. And he said, how many under 2? And my dad said, 3. And the guy puts his head out like, yeah, right, you know, and looks at us all, and he says, oh, my goodness. He goes, well, you deserve to get in free. I'll get you next year. But I think for Patty and I, and her nickname is Patty, and she's an incredible woman. She just retired this year as senior vice president of a private, very high academic, small university. But she also was vice president of the Gallup, SRI Gallup, the people who are the Gallup polls people for 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow. She has quite a story herself, and she has a beautiful family. But one of the biggest things that happens when a person is a twin, and it's particularly an identical twin, and identical twins often grow so they don't look that much alike, or there's something, I mean, there's always a way to tell each them apart. I had a rounder face. She had a slightly longer structure, facial structure. And that's, you know, I think that's how they first started to tell us apart, when they started to tell us apart. But the one thing that our parents did, which was a huge gift to us, is they didn't name us rhyming names or names that started with the same letter. They didn't compare us. We weren't in constant competition with each other at home. We were two of the four girls. And that made a huge difference in our lives because we were encouraged to be whoever we were, not one of the twins. And once we were out of the house, everyone considered us the twins. And I remember even in fifth grade, you know, we were in a fairly small class. I think there were like 18 kids. And we were, the teacher put us on opposite sides of the classroom. We were always on the opposite sides, or one was in the front and the another was in the back, but we were never near each other. And we took an arithmetic quiz, some kind of a math quiz, or no, I guess it was a test. And the teacher never left the room, and we both scored exactly the same. We made the same mistake on the same problem. And immediately there were some accusations of, well, you know, you cheated.
Sure.
We said,
sure.
How do we cheat? You know, we were that far apart. You know, how could we possibly have cheated? And, you know, and we weren't passing notes back and forth. We weren't even looking at each other. And so the teacher said, well, and I said, yeah, when we talked to our parents that night, my mother said, they compared your two tests. They didn't compare anyone else's two tests. Who knows? There could have been other people that made the same mistake, or two people who made identical mistakes and got the same grade, but they're not getting compared the way you are.
Let me ask you about when you get older. We all get the idea of what it's like to be twins and growing up together while you're young. But when you get older, it's interesting because you don't live in the same state. You totally different professions. The closeness that you had when you're young, are there still elements of that that linger on when you're, you know, at your age at this point in life? You're a mother. You have your own family. She has her family. And you live far apart. What's the connection like now?
Oh, it's still very, very strong. And frankly, our little sister is still living, and we have a strong connection with her too. But Patty and I, we are, you know, we're constantly in contact. And one of the things that I do, which I shouldn't do, but because I've had this head injury and because that has made a change in a lot of the things that I can do, I have a tendency sometimes to compare myself to her and see what she's able to do that I no longer am able to do. And I need to be thankful that I have what I have and not be wishing that I was back to where I was. But it is interesting that one of my closest friends is a family physician, and 3 years after the head injury, she was at our home, and my little sister came to visit, and my little sister is just moving around the place and doing all this stuff and just really busy, and all of a sudden, Myla, who's my friend Myla, said, oh, my gosh. And I said, what? And she said, I just realized how much you slowed down, because looking at Beth, who's my little sister, she said, that's how busy you used to be. You used to move like that. You used to do that much stuff. And I said, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Patty came to visit, and then it was just like the icing on the cake. She said, oh, yes, there have been some major changes in your life. And I said, yeah, there have. But we've had times when, for instance, we seem to know when the other one is in trouble or having a problem. Pardon me?
I said, that's what I was getting at. Do you have feelings?
Yeah.
Can you sense things that are going on with her?
And unexplainably. I mean, when we were still in high school, we were seniors in high school, I got up out of a very intense senior math class and excused myself. And I know the professor who came over to teach us, must have thought I was crazy, but I knew my sister was in chemistry, and I went down to that wing of the school and stuff, and she'd been in a small chemistry accident. She was fine, but nonetheless, she had had an experience where, you know, she'd gone through some big emotional feelings and stuff like that, and somehow I knew she was in trouble, or she had been in trouble, and I got down there to see what was going on. And we've had many, many times through the years where one of us will pick up the phone, or I've had even times when I put my hand on the phone to dial her, and the phone rings, and she's on the other end.
And she's there,
and
one of us is
having a problem and needs to talk to the other one. Because
that's pretty amazing,
Yeah, we don't have our mother anymore. She died when I was pregnant with my first child. She was an incredible, wonderful mother. But so my sisters are the people I go to sometimes, very often, for advice, particularly when, you know, we had just moved somewhere and I didn't have a bunch of friends or anything. Those were the people. We moved around a lot, and we always had our family. We always had our sisters. And that was a huge part of our lives, knowing that they were there. And, yeah, so I would call sometimes, and Patty would be crying. And I'd say, what's going on? She said, oh, thank goodness you called, you know. I need to talk to you about whatever it is, you know. And
well, that's
we've
amazing.
Been through, I'm going to say, yeah, and we've been through some similar issues. Like we had a health situation, and she had it. It's not something that was an obvious thing that everybody was going to get. We were both going to get or something like that. But she ended up with this health situation, and she had surgery and went through all of the things that needed to be done to make sure that she was healthy and well and would be all the rest of her life from that. And then 4 years later, I was diagnosed with the same thing.
Really?
So,
wow.
And our doctors knew, I mean, they were aware of it, and it was actually breast cancer, which was what our mother died of. So we were all being very carefully monitored, but it was interesting that that happened and that it happened 4 years apart. And the oncologist, the cancer physician, who consulted for us and who we went to see after my surgery, said the reason yours was 4 years later than your sister's, this is his supposition, is because my doctor had put me on a medication that was brand new use of that medication. And they were doing trials to try and see if it would prevent breast cancer. And he said, I believe that your 5 years of taking that medication bought you 4 years of being cancer-free.
Wow. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very good. Listen, before, you know, time is slowly running out. That's all fascinating about being a twin and having a twin. I'm sure people who've often thought about what it's like to be a twin or have a twin can appreciate all of that. Before we run totally out of time, I want to get into a little bit of what you're doing these days. I know you've become an investor, like a day trader, and you taught this yourself, although I understand your dad really kind of taught you a good bit of this and how to do this. Is that right?
But yeah, I mean, in my father, we lived in New Jersey, but he worked up in New York City, and he was close to Wall Street. He wasn't a broker. He was a mechanical electrical engineer who went into management and was in management for this huge company. But he always was very interested in investments, and he would pick up, we would drop him off. We would, us kids all in our pajamas, and my mother in the one car, and we would drive to Newark, which was where the train station was, not too far from where we lived, and drop him off. And the first thing he would do was pick up the Wall Street Journal, and he would read it on his way up in the L, and then take the subway and walk to work. And when he would do the same thing on his way home, and by the time I got into high school, I just thought it was fascinating what he was doing over there with all those numbers, and I was into higher math, and I thought, wow. And he said to me one day, Ginger, you seem to be interested. Do you want to see what's going on? And I said, yeah. So he taught me, and this was, of course, way before the days when you could look online. There weren't computers where you could look and see what was going on minute by minute and second by second. And we didn't even have calculators. And a lot of people did their work by hand, but my father, being the engineer he was, had this incredible slide rule. And so I had a baby slide rule. And that's how he figured a lot of the information instead of using a calculator. But he's the one, he really taught me about investments and wisely investing. And I, you know, he gave me my start and I invested and he left me with some, I mean, he and my mom, they put some stocks into a fund for education and I didn't use all of them and they said, they're yours. So yeah. I had something as a basis to start with and I continued to invest all through the years, even as I was working full time. And
what about now? What about now?
I know income for us.
Pardon? What about today? You do that today, right? You are a kind of a.
I do that today. I call myself an ethical investor, because there's some companies I absolutely won't buy because of what they do, but that's my opinion. You know, everybody has their own opinions about things.
Sure.
Like I'm not into. I think smoking is a terrible thing, and so I'm not a big buyer of tobacco company stocks or something like that. But the day trading is totally different. And I have had to learn from square one with that. And I really, you know, just started doing that about a year and a half ago when I realized that I was never going to be well enough to be regularly at a job. I couldn't predict from one day to the next if I was going to be okay or if I was going to be having a bad day and I needed to stay in bed. And my boss said one day, you know, we need to clone you. I said, I have a clone. She lives in Nebraska. And she said, yes, but she's in the wrong field.
Well, listen, let me interrupt you for a minute here.
Yeah.
Ginger, stick with me. We have just a minute left. In a nutshell, are you doing pretty good as a daytime investor? How's it going as a day trader?
I'm continuing to learn. And last week, I had the best week I've ever had. So
really?
I'm getting to the point where I'm feeling confident enough of myself. A lot of day traders lose their entire accounts. And I have a limit, and I've took a class with a group called the Online Trading Academy. I went to their class.
Listen, we're running out of time, Ginger. Hate to interrupt you, but in a nutshell, you're doing pretty good? Yes or no?
I'm doing okay. I'm getting better, and
good enough.
I'm still learning as I always have been.
All right, that's it for today, Ginger. We're out of time. We'll be back next week with more from Virginia French, Ginger French in Wichita, Kansas. She's our pharmacy guru who is now turned to, because of an accident, turned to day trading. And we've been learning all about her life. It's a fascinating story. Thanks so much, Ginger. And that's it for now. I'm Doug Llewellyn. Bye, everybody. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.